This past year, I had a conversation with Rabbi Harold Kushner in which he told me that he had learned something new about the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, from a scholar in residence at his synagogue. What this scholar told him was that in rereading the Akedah, she noticed something, a little switch in meaning, that she thought was significant. Remember, when Isaac and Abraham are walking towards the mountain, at a certain point, Isaac, knowing that they are going to sacrifice, says to his father, "I see all the accoutrements of sacrifice, the wood, I know that you have a knife for a burnt offering, but aye sela olah, but where's the animal? Where's the lamb?" Abraham says to him, "God will see to the lamb, my son," and the rabbis assume that's when Isaac realized what was going on. Yet he walks on with Abraham under the assumption that a lamb will be sacrificed when they get, of course, to the top of Moriah, and he is bound on the altar, and the angel stays Abraham's hand. Abraham looks, and what does he see? An isle, a ram. He doesn't see a lamb. He had told Isaac that God would provide a lamb, but that's not what he sees. What he sees is a ram. In other words, he told Isaac that he would sacrifice a child, because a lamb is a child, but he sacrifices a ram, which is a parent, an older animal, not a younger one. And the question is, what is the significance of that substitution that Abraham, in a way, assumes he's going to sacrifice his child, but a piece of himself ends up being sacrificed instead? And this theme, by the way, runs through the Bible. There was a psychoanalyst named Eric Welisch who years ago wrote a book called Isaac and Oedipus, and he said if Freud has known his Bible as well as he knew his Greek myth, he would have talked not about how, as in Oedipus, children destroy their parents, but how, as in Isaac, parents destroy their children. It happens with Isaac. It happens with Saul and David. David is a sort of adopted son. It happens with Yiftach and his daughter. The theme of what parents do to their children is very powerful in the Bible. And I thought about this when I saw, as I suspect some of you did, a very powerful editorial in the Los Angeles Times earlier this week by a woman named Elizabeth Marquardt, who is a scholar at the Institute for American Values, who has just completed the first large-scale study of adults whose parents, when they were children, had divorced. And she tried to find out, what effect does it have on you now that you are an adult and can speak about the experience? The grown children of divorce say there is no such thing as a good divorce. Maybe there is for the parents, but there isn't for the children. What is the one abiding legacy of divorce for children? Loneliness. The frequent absence of their parents who were living in another household, working, or dating made the children of divorce 7 times more likely to agree with the statement, "I was alone a lot as a child," than children whose parents had never divorced. Another recurring theme is having to grow up too soon. Even when parents don't fight, and of course when parents fight, it is far worse, but even when they don't, children take on the stressful new job of making sense of their parents' different beliefs, values, and lifestyles, even as their parents are free to start new lives. The parents get to start new lives. The children, on the other hand, have the same life, but it is fragmented now into two systems of belief, two households, two allegiances, two loyalties, and one child. The reason that this is so important is not because divorce is never important, never essential. The Jewish tradition, as you all know, allows for divorce. It's in the Bible. But because human beings have a powerful, a very powerful instinct to make what they want to do the right thing to do, to deny the damage that we do, even though we know it to be so. So we say, no, really, the kids are handling it well. It's really okay. They really understand. They really get just as much love, feel just as safe as they did before. It's not true. It's just not true. Does that mean there is never a child who grows up with divorced parents who feels as safe as one who grows up in a household where the parents stay together? Of course not. Human situations always admit of exceptions, but they are exceptions. Remember that the essential fact about having a child is it's not the child's choice to be had. When you bring a child into the world, you bring with it all the obligations of taking care of that child. And, as the substitution of the ram for the lamb suggests, if something has to be sacrificed, it's supposed to be the adult, not the child. If some happiness has to be compromised, it should be the happiness of the parent, not the happiness of the child. If a consideration has to be overriding of safety or of love, the consideration is not for the parent, it's for the child. Many also recall feeling that they had to protect their parents and felt far less able to go to their parents for comfort. How do you go to a parent for comfort when they're grieving the end of their marriage? And you know, as a child, because children are so exquisitely sensitive, that they're feeling so much pain that you don't want to project your pain onto them. That they don't have the strength to deal with what you're going through right now. And if a parent doesn't have the strength to deal with what a child is going through, the child is left alone. One of the things that children say is that they felt as though they had no one to turn to. People didn't reach out to them. Occasionally, they found a friend or a teacher. But when you lose the parent, you lose the foundation of your world. And no one else is your mother or your father. Experts often insist that if divorced parents only minimize the conflict after divorce, the children will be fine. But we found that only 1/5, that is 20%, of grown children of divorce recall a lot of parental conflict after divorce. In other words, most divorces don't have a lot of parental conflict afterwards. Yet, they still struggled alone to figure out the big questions in life. What is true? What is right and wrong? Whether there is a God? The often dramatic contrast between their parents' beliefs and values and the silence about the divorce seemed to leave them little choice. I want to read the ending of the article and then summarize it. A good divorce is better than a bad divorce. but it is never good. Abusive marriages are bad for children, and divorce is a critical safety valve for kids and parents alike. But most people are not aware that two-thirds of divorces today end low-conflict marriages. In other words, most divorces are not the result of abuse, not the result of cruelty, not the result of high conflict in the home. For the children's sake, we need to save and strengthen these marriages whenever possible. And if parents must divorce, we should no longer overlook the lonely, divided children left in the wake. I have said before, from this pulpit and privately, that if you are in an abusive marriage, especially a marriage, although not only, but especially a marriage of physical abuse, you owe it to yourself and to your children to leave. To model for them that a human being ought not to accept that from anyone. But if we are talking about the unhappiness that comes with lack of perfection, if we are talking about the distance that sometimes grows with the years, if what we mean is what Virginia Woolf put so eloquently when she said, "People change and they forget to tell each other," that we were together and we've grown apart, then please remember that there actually is someone's happiness who takes precedence over our own, and that is the happiness of our children. And the reason it takes precedence is, one, because they are more vulnerable, and two, because we owe them. I always found it interesting that in the Ten Commandments, you have a command that says what children owe parents, but you have no command about what parents owe children. Why is that? Because you're only commanding things that people must be reminded of or should find difficult to do. And I think the Torah optimistically assumes that parents will know that they owe children. Vishinantam levanecha, you must teach your children. You brought them into the world. They are our responsibility. And the greatest gift we can give them is a stable, certain, and loving home. All of us know that this is a difficult, an emotional, and a very widespread topic, something that touches all of our lives through friends, through relatives, through our community. But it is important that we do not deceive ourselves. The choices we make as parents have profound, lasting, and sometimes irrevocable effects on our children. And the first statement made about human nature in the Bible is Lo tov heyot adam levado. It's not good for a person to be alone. In other words, the great curse of human life is loneliness. That's what is reported by adults who grow up in a home where the earthquake has split the world apart, and parents that were together are now separate. So remember the story of the Akedah, the story of the sacrifice that didn't happen, because in the end, it was the ram, it was the parent, who took upon himself the pain to spare the child, so that he might grow and build a home for himself where his children could grow. We will never eradicate divorce from our community or from our world, nor should we. Sometimes it is the only way. But let's make sure that it is the way only when it is the only way, and that we model for our children courage, nobility, sometimes sacrifice, and always love. Shabbat Shalom.